Today, it's my pleasure to be sitting here with Mark Sanborn, president of Sanborn & Associates, a company that he founded, is dedicated to developing leaders in business and in life. Mark is an international best-selling author, speaker, and noted authority on leadership, team building, customer service, and change. He's one of the youngest speakers inducted into the Speaker Hall of Fame, and in 2007 was presented with the Cabot Award. Mark focuses on remarkable performance in all areas of life, and he's here today to share his tips to getting the high-quality performance that you want. Mark, great to have you here today. Welcome again to Success.
Thank you, Darren. Delighted to be back with you.
So, Mark, we did sit down together back in October of 2009 for Success Magazine discussion, and for those that didn't happen to catch that interview, give our listeners a little bit more about your background and why you think you have a particular expertise to address this month's topic, which is focused on communication.
Communication in general and public speaking in particular changed my life. When I was young, I got involved in public speaking and used it not only to become a better communicator, but really as a process for mastery in other areas of my life. When I learned the process of how to communicate better, and that's always, of course, about both the how to do it and the who to role model yourself after to initially learn, I was able to use that process to develop confidence, and I was then able to transfer both that process of mastery and the confidence I developed to the other areas of my life. And this created what we can all benefit from, and it's often known as a virtuous cycle. You know, a vicious cycle spirals us downward, but a virtuous cycle helps us improve. So if we understand the process and we practice it to the point of mastery, we then gain the confidence that helps us to get better in other areas of our life. So for the last 24 years, I've been speaking professionally full-time, and if you count all the unpaid speeches I made prior to that, it's probably closer to 30 or 35 years that I've been in the business of communicating.
I like that virtuous cycle. I've often referred to it as the ripple effect, but I really like the term the virtuous cycle. So you've been quoted, Mark, as saying that communication is both a science and an art. So explain that to us.
Well, you might think about a bottle of wine. Sometimes you can have good wine in a bad bottle. You look at the bottle and you don't expect much, but the wine inside's wonderful. Sometimes you have a bottle that looks terrific, but the wine inside isn't so good. I think the goal in effective communication is to have both substance and style. And science is built on rules and practices and procedures, while art is inherently a creative process. I believe the best communicators combine the two. They take the best practices and rules for effective communication, but they use their own creativity to add the essence of who they are and what they stand for, and that's why the outcome is always a little bit different for everyone if they're using both the science and the art. Now, science without art makes communication very sterile. Art without science makes communication very chaotic. The goal is to provide both discipline and creativity to create the best outcome.
Do you have any examples of somebody who might be an orator or a speaker or a CEO or a leader might be two on the side of science and maybe somebody who might be on the two on the side of art and maybe somebody that is just perfect right down the middle? Good examples of communication to this point.
Let's start with the perfect right down the middle. I think a well-known communicator who represents a wonderful company and a wonderful product line, of course, is Steve Jobs. People hang on what Steve Jobs says, and that's because he couples the science of good technology and good products and how to talk about them in an informative and factual way with his own passion and enthusiasm for the design of those products and how they can benefit users. And I think in terms of a high-profile leader who gets it right on most counts, Steve Jobs is a good science and art guy. When I tend to think about people who get the science right and the art wrong, I tend to think about not someone in particular, but that that prototypical college professor who droned on and on, and maybe your listeners will be familiar with Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the character played by Ben Stein. That's a good example of someone who's disseminating information and then tries for the obligatory involvement. Anyone? 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 So that's what I mean by someone who's got the information down, but has basically diminished, if not neutralized, the impact of that information from poor delivery and from a total and complete lack of creativity. The artistic people tend to be those people who are very passionate, and you latch on to their enthusiasm, but at the end you ask yourself, what was that all about? You knew they felt strongly. You just weren't sure what exactly it was they were feeling strongly about.
So let's get right to the heart of it. Tell us what you would define as winning communication.
Well, Darren, it might be helpful to go back to a quote from George Bernard Shaw that is fairly well known but worth repeating. He said, "The problem with communication is the illusion that it's been accomplished." You know, the potential for bad communication and misunderstanding is great. I remember some years ago when my son Jack was maybe 4 or 5 years old, we went into one of our favorite restaurants, and there was a signboard up front, handwritten in chalk. It said, "Fish, all you can eat." Jack looked up at me and my wife Darla and said, "Oh no, all you can eat is fish?" Well, he kind of struck on the problem with communication. It's easy to just, by subtly misinterpreting it, get the complete wrong conclusion. So I define winning communication as being heard and understood. Ideally, for winning communication to take place, your message not only needs to be heard or, in some instances, read in the case of written communication, not only heard or read and understood, but the intended effect of that communication needs to be achieved.
One of the things you said early in that discussion is something that I explain, that communication is the response you get. So how effective your communication was depends on how somebody responded to it. Because there's a lot of people say, well, this is what I said. But if that's not what they got, the person responsible for the poor communication is the person who said it. So ultimately, it comes down to communication is the response you get, and that's where you can actually determine whether what you said was effective or not. Now, one of the ways to learn the right way to do something is to know what are the wrong ways to do it. So share with us some of the single biggest mistakes communicators can make.
Well, I think the singular greatest mistake most communicators make is being unclear on what they're trying to achieve. I think if you're clear on what it is you're trying to accomplish, and I usually frame that by asking myself this question, or if I'm designing a presentation, I'll ask the client this question: what is it I want the audience to think, feel, and or do? And thinking is intellectual, and that changes the way they perceive things, the way they think about things. Feeling, of course, is emotional, and doing is about taking action. And very often, the best communication touch on all three. We change the way people think, we create positive emotion, and that leads to positive action. So I think the number one reason why people fail isn't necessarily for a lack of skill set. It's just that they're very unspecific. You know, they're muddlers, as I like to refer to them. They leave it up to you and I to figure out what it is they want or need. And as you said, it's the responsibility of the communicator to elicit the right response. If somebody doesn't get it, you've got to take responsibility, not place blame.
There you go. So, okay, one would be not being specific enough, but are there any other common mistakes that people make in communicating?
I would say another mistake is not investing the effort in doing the hard work. You know, we live in the age of the easy and the simple, as well as the instantaneous. And certainly convenience is a wonderful thing, but I think we forget that those who are really good at what they do, whether it's in sales, whether it's parenting, whether it's managing or leading, are people who invest the effort to learn and develop the skills. I also think that when you communicate, it's incumbent upon you as a communicator to have something significant or important to say. Hubert Humphrey said, "The right to be heard does not automatically include the right to be taken seriously." I think it's so easy today for people to write a blog or to post an audio or video on the internet that there's a lot of schlock out there. And that means that there's more noise, clutter, and confusion that you and I as communicators have to be able to cut through. We need to have things that will affect people and make them care. If people don't care, they don't listen, and no matter how clear you may be, you're not going to get the response that you desire.
So let's go to the positive side, the things that one can do right or correct in communication. You wrote on your blog that communication is easy, but communicating effectively is far more difficult. So give our listeners some of the foundational ingredients, those few core things that they can think about today, 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, that will help them continue to be effective communicators.
Well, Darren, I'll try to make it easy, and let's organize around this idea of five C's, the letter C, because I think if we can remember all five, or at least most of these five C's, it will help us be effective communicators. And the first we've touched on, but for emphasis, we've got to be clear on what we're trying to accomplish. The second C is confident. We need to be confident, and that comes from believing that we have an important message, that we ourselves are good messengers, and that the recipient is important enough to invest time in to communicate with them. The third C is consistency. Because, you know, consistency is critical. There's so much ambivalence and uncertainty that gets communicated. And sometimes one of the best tools we've got for retention and action is when we say it so many times that the listener could repeat it in their sleep. The fourth C is catchy. Remember, we talked about how much clutter, noise, and confusion there is around us and how difficult it is to penetrate that and to get the attention of the listener. This idea of being catchy is the difference between saying it's a really good car or saying it's the ultimate driving machine. And that, of course, is a good example from BMW. Even if we don't own a BMW, we know it's the ultimate driving machine. And finally, as important as those first four are, to be clear, confident, consistent, and catchy, I think this is the icing on the cake. This is what it's all about. Communication needs to be compelling.
Fantastic. Now, going back to the principle that communication is the response you get, how can someone who is trying to communicate a specific message make sure that they aren't misunderstood?
Well, the breakfast of champions, and maybe the lunch and dinner as well, is feedback. And of course, feedback is when we have evidence that the other person has heard and understood us. Of course, someone can repeat our message and still not understand the message. And I'm always reminded of a scene from the movie Philadelphia, where Denzel Washington plays a lawyer who is consulting with a potential client, played by Tom Hanks. And Washington, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, Washington uses a wonderful technique as he's getting enough information about the potential case. He says to Tom Hanks, "Explain it to me like I was a second grader." Well, he was aiming to reduce it to what I call the irreducible minimums.
So you discuss three modes of communication, one being self-centered, two being message-centered, and three being listener-centered. So walk us through each of these and explain how each of these modes affects our communication.
These three modes of communication are all about focus. And I learned this when I was learning to speak in competition. If I was preoccupied with myself, whether the audience liked me, how I sounded, if I looked nervous, how was I coming across, that was being self-centered in my communication focus. The problem with that is I was ignoring both the message and the audience. The emphasis, or the focus, if you will, was on me. Now, sometimes I would be confident in my ability to communicate, but I was worried about the message itself, how the message was being received, if I was getting it just right, using the most appropriate words. And even though it was a little better to be focused on the message than simply focused on myself, I was still missing the goal, because the goal is to be focused on the audience, to be so secure in your own abilities and to be confident in your message so that you can engage the audience and focus on them. And as I was thinking about this interview today, Darren, it dawned on me that a good conversation is never like a speech. But a good speech is always like a conversation. I mean, think about it. If you're talking with somebody and it sounds like they're giving you 3 points in a poem, they're making a speech, you think, wow, this person and I just aren't connecting. They're speaking to me, not with me. But when we hear a really good speaker who's not self-centered or message-centered, when they're focused on us, even though we may be part of a large group, it feels conversational. It's relatable. We feel like they're talking with us, not speaking to us.
You caught me writing notes. This is great. I mean, I love that. Good conversation is not like a speech, but a good speech is like a good conversation. Excellent point there. Now, you wrote about being an encore performer. So tell our listeners how they could become more of an encore communicator.
Well, I'm going to put this back on the listener. I want you to think about two different people. I want you to think about a person right now you'd love to get together with and ask yourself this question. Why do you want to hang out with them? You say, well, I like them. They're an old friend. They're a lot of fun. I'm guessing that if you dig deep enough, it's because you love hearing what they have to say. They amuse you. They entertain you. They encourage you. They inspire you. They challenge you. Think about somebody that you have a meeting with in the next 2 weeks and you're dreading it because you know it's going to be like watching paint dry or like chewing shards of glass. It's going to be painful. And it's not that you have anything against them personally. It's just that you don't want any more of what it is they got to sell. That's the antithesis. That's the opposite of an encore communicator. So what it boils down to is this. An encore communicator is somebody we want to hear more from. We want to read the next book they write. We check to see if they have a new blog. We look at their Twitter postings because we want more of their ideas. We want more of them. And to be an encore communicator, I suggest basically three things. Number one, tell a better story. But to tell a better story, number two, paint a better picture. And to paint a better picture, number three, pay better attention.
So I'm curious about this, Mark. What's the best advice you ever got about communicating?
You know, I'm glad you asked that because I can still remember. I was probably 14 or 15 years old, and I was speaking with my mother to a state senator in Ohio where I grew up. And I can still remember his name. That's why I think it was good advice. And David Johnson said, Mark, always remember whenever you communicate, people want to be entertained. And he went on to say, whether you're giving a eulogy or a commencement speech or speaking at a staff meeting, people want to be entertained. And you think, whoa, wait a minute. You want to entertain people in a eulogy? Well, I think what he was saying, if I could use a synonym, is people want to be engaged. And more often than not, if something's entertaining, it is engaging. We live in an age that is saturated with stimulation and entertainment. And to think that we can communicate effectively and not engage people through interesting ideas and interesting presentation techniques, I think is the height of hubris. We have to engage, and the best way to do that is to entertain. Because frankly, ideas go down best on the wings of entertainment.
Now, long after this interview is over, what tips can you offer our listeners to follow up on learning to become a better communicator, to continue their learning process? What would be some tips that you'd offer about how to go about doing that?
If you want to be a better communicator, I think the first step is to become a student of communication. And I think if you're a student of communication, that's really a double major. It's about communication skills, and it's about understanding people. You've got to really focus on both. And I think that one of the easiest ways to be a better communicator is to realize that by listening and watching, you can learn from anyone, even bad communicators. Whenever I listen to someone speak, whether it's a sermon in church or a newscaster on TV, wherever I find myself, I now, after so many years in the business, instinctively look for the things they're doing right and the things they could do better. And I'm doing it not to be critical of them, but to be constructive for me. Because I'm learning all the time the nuances, the tricks, the techniques that work, and I'm paying attention to the ones that don't work. Now, once you have become a student of the craft or the art and science of communication, I think the next step is to develop your own style. Don't be a copy of anyone. You know, sameness won't take you very far in life. You know, and as I've said before in our conversations, Darren, and with the listeners and readers of Success Magazine, we emulate to learn, but we innovate to earn. And that's key. Once we have the science of communication down, once we've learned the rules and the basic practices, then we get to have some fun and we get to interject into communication our own creativity, and that's where the art comes from. And of course, practice is so important. You know, I think if I've been successful, whether it's as a writer or a speaker, I would have to attribute it to the fact that I practice a lot. I just think that preparation and practice are the two things that make us good, whether it's at a sales call or whether it's giving a keynote speech. And finally, I like to read a lot and I like to write a lot. One of the reasons I blog is because blogging gives me a chance to write little 300, 400, 500 word articles whenever I want to. I find that sitting down to write a book is really hard. And Darren, you just wrote and released your book, The Compound Effect. So you know that the way you wrote a book, most likely, and tell me if I'm wrong, is you did it little bits at a time. And after you wrote enough little bits, before you know it, you had a chapter and 2 chapters and 10 chapters, and voila, you've got a book. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of writing consistently or speaking a lot whenever you get an opportunity will make you a better communicator.
Yeah, that book process. I'm still bleeding, and the tears haven't totally dried. Yes, it's a painful process for sure. All right, Mark, this has been great. So I got just one more question for you today. You know, your focus is on developing leaders, and you do that by giving them the tools and advice they need to succeed at that. And here at Success, we strive to do the same so that our readers can be leaders in every aspect of their life. So tell our listeners from your perspective why it's important for people to read publications like Success in their pursuit to be more effective leaders and even more effective communicators.
I think we should all read Success Magazine to improve. And improve is an acronym that focuses us on the key benefits we can gain. The I in improve is for ideas. You know, ideas are what drive progress and drive success. The M is for motivation. Success Magazine gives us reasons for action. The P, performance. We can read tips and tactics to help us be more successful both personally and professionally. The R are for reminders, because there are a lot of things that we know are important but we forget unless we're reminded. The O are for opportunities that the entrepreneurs that you profile and the successful people in your magazine have either spotted or created. The V is for visionaries from all walks of life who are doing the kinds of things that we all aspire to do. And last but not least, it ties it all together, the IMPROVE acronym for how you can improve by reading Success examples. Examples of what to do, how to do it, and why to do it. And that's why I think we should all read Success Magazine.
Well, Mr. Mark Sanborn, as always, very much enjoyed our time together. I hope that our readers have as many notes as I do, and that I hope our listeners will recognize my personal improvements in communication after this interview as well. So, Mr. Mark Sanborn, thank you very much for being with us today and sharing your great ideas.
It is always my pleasure, Darren.
Success Audio Series, copyright Success Media, all rights reserved.